Montero Consulting welcomes you to the Anywhere Office with Phil and Jason Montero. In the next hour, Phil and Jason take a big picture approach to the philosophies and strategies of navigating today's digital lifestyle. Turn up your speakers and don't click that mouse. Here are your hosts, Phil and Jason Montero.
Hey, welcome to the Anywhere Office, our show about living a digital lifestyle and navigating the changing world of work. I'm Phil Montero.
And I'm Jason Montero.
And we're happy to have you here. Jay, I don't know about you, I'm really excited about today's topic because I think it's something that really affects everybody. And today what we're going to be focusing on is search and research, how to search the web effectively. And I think this is something that people spend a large amount of their time doing, but I don't know that a lot of people have really ever been taught to search effectively on the Internet. And there's so much information out there that I think not doing it effectively can really impede the way you work, wouldn't
you
say?
Yeah, and I think a lot of people might not even be aware how much time they spend searching the web, or just doing search and research in general, not just on the web. And, yeah, I'm definitely stoked about this. This has always been a topic that's dear to my heart, search and research. Always been something I love to do. I'm one of those strange people who always love to be kind of in the library, chasing it down. There's sort of a detective sort of, you know, which I love.
We were just talking about
there's a detective feel. There's a sleuth kind of, there is, I know there's some sell, people say, oh, when you make that sell, there's that rush, you know, there's that high that they get. And I am one of those people who experience that. When I find something I'm looking for, I know you too, you've also had a quest.
That's right. I pride myself, I usually like to throw out the challenge to anybody I know to try and throw something. I'm so confident in my searching skills that way. I ask people to find obscure things.
Sure. And you find that in groups of people, you know, sometimes in the office, you'll be the person, if you do have this skill, where people come to you and they say to you, oh man, I know you can find anything. Can you find me X, Y, and Z, whatever it is? You know, I had a friend once who had a Cher doll when she was a girl, and she loved the Cher doll, and her mom had thrown it away from the attic, and sure enough, found that Cher doll on eBay, and then there's just the pure joy of that. Unbelievable,
right?
So we're going to break it down a little bit, and we're going to talk about a little bit about why people search, and then we're going to talk about where to search and how to search. And after the break, at the half hour, we're going to be joined by Rich Robinson, who is a professional researcher, genealogist. He searches histories on people and businesses and buildings, and we're going to be able to pick his brain a little bit about, like, really the real professional level.
I'm really looking forward to that because, like I said, I fancy myself a good search person, but, you know, Richard does this. I mean, this is what he does, you know. So to be able to pick his brain and hopefully get a few tips myself, looking forward to that. Sharpening the saw, always.
So let's start out. I think there are a lot of different reasons why people are searching the Internet, and I think that it is that range of reasons that sometimes leads people to be misinformed or maybe to not have a clear view of how much time they spend doing this. I mean, you do everything from searching through the Yellow Pages ads or looking for a phone number for a local business or to get your oil changed or to personal type of searches. You're looking for a movie to rent or
a restaurant to go eat at.
And always, then you're going to be at work. You're going to be doing research for projects you have at work, or maybe you're a student and you're in school and you're actually writing a paper and you're doing some kind of formalized academic research. So, would you say that the methods of research are different depending on what type of search you're doing, or are there some fundamentals we're going to break down today?
No, I think there's fundamentals. I mean, and some of these fundamentals, and I think Rich will probably attest to this when we talk to him later, because, you know, here's a guy that's been doing research before the Internet was really accessible, and I'm sure, you know, or at least I shouldn't say I'm sure, I'm not that confident, but I would think that he'll say that there are fundamentals of search in general, you know, things like knowing where to look for the right information you want, how to pose the question or what particular words that you want to search for. I mean, whether you're doing that search in the library or on the Internet or through the card catalog, I mean, I think those are some basic skills. And I think it starts with, you know, your search can be as accurate as you want it to be, but if you're not searching in the right places, then you're not going to find what you're looking for. And I think you can cut down the time it takes you to find something by going to the right source to begin with. So, I think one of the first things we should talk about are what are some of the main places that people do research on.
I want to say right at the front side, don't be a heathen and steal people's the hard work, I always strongly attest that if you do your research and you find some information that was provided to you by somebody else,
yeah.
no matter what way, there is a protocol that says that you have to find the correct way to credit those people and do so.
I agree completely, especially with all the, I know that's one of the things with being able to search, we're going to talk a little bit later about searching for images and things. If you use someone's images, creative content, anything like that, it really is important to give credit where credit is.
Absolutely. And okay, so the first most obvious place where people search are going to be the big boy search engines that everybody, you know, that you're on the internet, you're trying to find whatever it is, whatever level of search you're doing, and you have Google is number one.
There's no boy bigger than Google.
No. That's it. With the two O's to prove it. So, I mean, this Google was, we've brought this up before. It's a yep. word in the dictionary now that means to search on the internet.
Yep.
So they, I mean, and the recent numbers, I think they're up. I mean, you can argue the point all day, but they are above 60% of the searches that take place on the internet in a day are Google. Second only is Yahoo. And then third, and I believe it's MSN, and they've yep. been slipping a little bit, but just
sure.
yesterday, I believe, their new search engine came out of beta. It's called Live Search. It's at live.com, and they're really hoping that that kind of puts them back in the fray to be
I'm glad Bill Gates got my memo that we were doing a show today
nice.
On search engines.
And brought it out of
he
beta.
He should launch it out of beta. You know,
that's right.
In
he knows a mover and a shaker when he sees
does,
one.
Boy,
man,
he does.
So.
Dollar Bill.
Bill Gates. But Google is really going to be the one we're going to talk, when we talk more about how to search, we can kind of break down some Google stuff. But these are not the only places to search.
No, well, they're the ones that most people think of, and they'll, again, like we said, going to the right search engine or search place or a specific one that narrows your search is often one of the first tips for more effectively finding what you want. And I think, you know, you can search these individual search engines. There's also something called a meta search, which allows you to search multiple engines at once. So you can search across Google and possibly Amazon and Yahoo and
right. And rather than broaden your search, this is, or rather than narrow your search.
That's right.
I'm sorry. This
yep.
would actually broaden your search. It would bring you back a meta search engine, something like Mama, I believe one of
yep.
them is, or Metacrawler.com. It's
going to
bring you back the top two or three results from a number of sources.
That's right. And I think for an initial step when you're searching, sometimes that's a good way to begin your search, although I most often just go to Google. You know, when you're not sure if you're just starting a search and you're not as confident on the topic and you're just learning about it, sometimes it's just finding out what keywords are used on those top pages from those search
right.
engines, and then you can use those phrases to kind of further narrow your search, and we'll talk more about that later. So yeah, there's ways of doing meta searches and searching multiple engines, but you found a good list of more narrowed or niche search engines for specific topics that
absolutely.
We were talking about.
And a lot of these are ones that we use day-to-day. So, for instance, if you go to some place like the Internet Movie Database or IMDb.com, which I know you love, if I see an actor and I want to know more about an actor, I want to know more about a series of television series or something that's in that specific kind of film or in television industry,
yep.
you can go straight to that site. You can type in a person's name. You can type in the name of a series or a movie, and you are going to instantly, I mean, none of this poking around
no.
through fan sites and all this stuff. You're going to get right down there.
More
exactly.
dinner time arguments have been solved by there's a short list of websites that get a button on my shortcut toolbar on Firefox, and IMDb is on
right
that
there,
list,
right
so.
There. Okay, so for that industry, and then again, for things in print, or if it's music that you're looking for, like if, say, I'm looking for, oh man, what were all the songs on Pink Floyd's second album? You know, rather than go and try and look for a discography or something on Google, you could go straight to a place like Amazon, and you could just search for that CD, and then when it comes up, now, yes, it's a commerce site.
Yep.
But it is actually a very well-organized database.
Yep.
And it contains a wealth of information.
I'm constantly using Amazon just for research on authors or topics to see what other books have come out on.
Right.
And again, you know, using it in a variety of ways.
And you'd think that maybe that would be detrimental to a person who's in commerce because they want that visit to their site. But I think by making themselves an authority in, like, things in print,
mm-hmm.
books, CDs, that they're enjoying the backside of that, if you
sure.
will, in that it just gives them that top-of-mind awareness and that you go there and you spend time on their site.
That's right. And I think, you know, hand-in-hand almost with an Amazon is a site like eBay, where, again, it's a commerce site. If you're looking to purchase something, you're going to go to a site like eBay if you're looking for vintage, older items. I wanted to buy the first computer I ever had, the Atari 800XL.
Nice.
And so the first place I went to was eBay, you know, searched around. I could have searched the web, it would have taken forever, but there I was able to find somebody that was selling it, and get it, and, you know, because I was looking to buy something, I was looking for a product, so that was...
That's right, and I think that as a research tool, eBay really shines when it comes to sort of these vintage things. Like, I've been looking for vintage guitars, or if I see one in a pawn shop, I will often go to eBay and use that to see what other guitars of that year sold for, and what's available out there, and what kind of, you know, how, you know, because there's all kinds of people out there who are selling vintage and outdated stuff.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think there's a number of these, you know, in e-pinions we talked about where people review sites and specific sites that list newspapers or radio stations, things like that.
Yeah, so a lot of times what you want to do is go out there and see if there's a more specified search engine. If you know exactly what it is, or if you have a narrow idea of what it is you're looking for, I guess what we're saying is that maybe you start with a Google, but then what you look for is one of these industry-specific...
That's right.
Websites, something like FindLaw or whatever it is, and then you can start searching in that, and it's going to narrow it down so that then what you're getting down into is really the more specifics of
Yeah, and it's all about the narrowing, and we're going to talk more about that and some specific tips on how to search when we come back from this break, so stay tuned.
Business information you need, from the stock market to starting and managing your business. Voice America Business at voiceamerica.com.
Hi, this is Phil Montero, founder of YouCanWorkFromAnywhere.com, and I'd like to give you some of your time back. In my 15 years mentoring virtual teams and entrepreneurs, I've found literally hundreds of quick, easy-to-understand tips, tricks, and shortcuts. In the Anywhere Office ebook series, you can get my top tips about email, laptops, home offices, Palm Pilots, and virtual teams. If you act right now, you can get all 5 tip books for the price of 4, less than the cost of a tank of gas. Just visit YouCanWorkFromAnywhere.com and click on the Products tab. Then start thinking about what you're going to do with all that free time.
Welcome back to the Anywhere Office. If you have a question or comment, email radioshow@theanywhereoffice.com. Now back to the show. Here are Phil and Jason.
So before we went to break there, we were talking about where to search and some different specialized search engines and some of the general search engines. And now we'd like to talk a little bit about how to search, some methods, maybe some strategies, and some things that we've learned along the way.
Yeah, and as we mentioned, there's really kind of 2 ways, I guess, that you can go about searching. And one way is to, if you're not sure, we just mentioned, you know, if you're not sure what it is you're looking for, maybe start at a broader search engine or with broader phraseology, you know, the phrases and the words that you actually type into a search engine, and then kind of narrow your search from there. But as you were mentioning, there's a lot of specific narrow search engines, and you might want to go to a targeted one or type in a very detailed phrase so that you only get sites that are very targeted, and then as you gain information from some of those sites, maybe broaden your search, widen the net, so to speak, to catch more information, right?
Okay, so, yeah, if you could give me, like, a concrete example of that, like... 2 different type of search phrases, one that would be narrow and one that would be specific.
Like if I was looking at, and here's what I find people do far too often, is they type too few terms into a search engine. So for example, recently I was looking for dinner cruises. Now I particularly wanted ones in the Fort Lauderdale or Delray Beach area. Now some people would just go in and type the words dinner cruise into Google and hit OK or go, and it would come up and just find dinner cruises everywhere. Whereas I will type in a much more detailed phrase, dinner cruises, Fort Lauderdale, a specific area. If I'm looking for entertainment, I will type dinner cruises with entertainment, Fort Lauderdale, Florida, and type in something much more specific. I'm going to get much fewer results and much more targeted results, because when you type multiple words into a search engine that way, it's going to bring up pages that include all of those words. So the more words you use, obviously the more narrow or specific your search is going to be that way.
Right, so it's going to try and include most of those words, we should
That's
say.
That's correct, yeah, most
right? Because there are ways, and I think another thing that a lot of people may not realize about a search engine like Google, and I like to just specify Google because I think they really do spend a lot of time and energy trying to make sure that the results that you get are extremely relevant to what it is you typed in that box.
Sure.
But all they really have to go on is what you type in that box. Google is not
garbage
a mind
in,
reader.
Garbage out,
that's
as
right,
they say.
Despite what we may think. But there are some tools, and I don't know about the phrase, they call them Boolean operators,
yep.
Okay? And this is the type of thing where if you were to type a word, if I was to type a phrase in quotes in the Google box, if I was to say, history of vaudeville, and I put that in quotes, Google is going to go out and it's going to look for pages that contain that entire phrase, history of vaudeville,
that's
just the way it appears. Not
those
vaudeville's history.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to just try and find and bring back to me the most relevant pages that have that exact phrase on them in that order.
That's true.
As opposed to if you just type history of vaudeville, you might get back vaudeville and its history. Now, that may be what you're looking
for. The history
for.
Of theater, which might happen to have the word vaudeville somewhere farther
down. That's exactly
down,
right.
That
that's exactly thing. Right. So that is one type of Boolean operator. Another is the use of a plus and minus.
And that's one very few people use, I think.
That's right. And that's,
how does that work?
The way that would work would be is if I put a plus before a word with no space, so if I was to say vintage guitars, and I put a plus and the word Gibson there.
Mm-hmm.
But what the search engine is going to do is it's going to look for pages that have the word vintage guitar on them, and they must contain, the plus says, must. Contain.
Okay.
The word Gibson, I'm going to get back pages about Gibson vintage guitars is what I'm hoping to find. Now, if I put a minus there instead, that's telling the search engine must not contain.
Okay.
Therefore, if I wanted to find out about, you know, maybe precious stones, or I was looking for stones to make jewelry out of, and I put in stones minus rolling, no space, then I won't get back
no
all those
Jumpin'
pages
Jack Flash.
About Jumpin' Jack Flash. That's
all right.
Right. No Keith Richards falling out of a tree. I'm just going to get back sites that have the word stones do not have the word rolling.
So, and that those are huge, huge filters there that you're applying with just using a plus or a minus. And you can actually use those in conjunction with, as you were talking about, like the quotes. For example, you could do a search for a phrase and then put plus Rolling Stones, in quotes.
In quotes.
Or minus Rolling
That's
Stones.
Right.
And it would look for the phrase Rolling Stones. So really some of these Boolean operators can be used in conjunction with one another. And I think one good thing to point out is that, I know we're talking about Google right now, but these Boolean operators pretty much consistent across the board
across
with all search
board.
Engines, and in fact, for most part, with a lot of databases as well.
That's absolutely true.
You know, that search, if you know how to search one of these effectively, you can use those same tools, these same tips and strategies.
That's right. Another tool would be the and or the and not, and that is the same as basically the plus and minus in a lot of ways. If you said rolling and stones.
Okay.
Or if you said rolling and stones, not Keith Richards, or whatever it is.
Then the Mick fan page would come up.
That's right. That's exactly right. Then you get Ron Wood. those are some types of basic strategies when you're searching the web, is to use these Boolean operators to try and use a broader search terms or narrower search terms, depending on where you're looking. And then I think another part of the specification process is rather than using one of these maybe industry-specific sites, there are areas of some larger search sites that are focused on specific items or specific types of files or types of information.
Yeah, and like we were talking about with Google, I mean, you'll see a couple of, one of the things I love about Google is how simple they keep their web page. So you're not distracted or overwhelmed by too many choices. But one thing that's important to realize is that there is more to Google than meets the eye when you first go there. For example, if you go there, you'll see across the top of the search box the word web, which is the default. Then you'll also see images, video, news, maps. Now, what that means is that when you type your phrase into that box, before you even click the search button, by choosing one of those subcategories, then you're telling Google to do that search in that category. So, for example, as I mentioned, I pride myself on my searchability, and a friend instant messaged me and said, hey, I need a picture of the Burgermeister Meister Burger from the Christmas.
Fairly tall order.
Or so he thought. By the time he was done reading my reply to him, I had quickly gone on, typed Burgermeister Meisterburger, clicked images in Google, did a search, and within the first page of results had a picture of the little clay guy from the show, emailed him back the link, and I think his jaw is still scraping on the ground today. But again, that's a matter of typing in a specific phrase and then searching. I didn't just search the web and type in the word photo. I specifically clicked images and told Google just to search for images that have that phrase or that word.
And now that's going to search the actual title of the image?
Yes.
The file name?
Yeah, the file name of the image. So, you know, likely somebody would have that, you know, in the name of the image if it was a picture of
Right. And then if you didn't find it there, with that phrase still in the Google bar, you could just go over and click web, and it would then perform that same search, but across the entire web.
That's correct. When I'm looking for something new that's happening in the news, rather than searching the web on Google, I click the news link, and I'll type in a word like virtual teams or traffic or something I'm looking for, and then find out if there's been anything current in the news within the last couple of days that talked about that topic. And again, there's things, maps. If you're looking for directions or stores, you can use maps. And when you click the more link on Google, that's where you'll really, it'll kind of expand and show you some of the other options that are there. And you'll see things like books, Frugal, which is where you can search for shopping and good deals, and Google Groups, which are discussion boards, and I think a place that people don't often go. I spend a lot of time there because I am invariably troubleshooting some annoying piece of technology that's not behaving. And in Google Groups, I'll often find a lot of people, and it's not just for technical discussions, but it's a discussion board where people will post questions and then other people will post answers. And so by searching through those groups, rather than finding these big web pages, I find these specific discussions on very narrowed topics, and I'm often able to get some advice or find a solution to what it is.
That's right. And I'd like to point out that because Google is trying to do a certain amount of premonition when it comes to what it is people are looking for. So what they try and do is, and not just Google, but any search engine really, part of their job in making sure that what comes back is relevant to what you're looking for is figuring out how people are searching.
Mm-hmm.
So by breaking things down into categories like this, if you were to type something into the usual Google search engine and click web, it's not gonna necessarily default to some massively specialized discussion that's going on in one of these Google groups.
That's
if you had typed a phrase that maybe if it appeared exactly in a Google group, it would turn up. But because they're trying to figure out what most people are really looking for when they search, you really have to go to that group's category if you know that what you're looking for is most likely going to be found in there is what I'm trying to say.
You've got to do a little bit of work on your end to help Google best find the information you need.
That's right. And another tool that that Google specifically offers is the Google Alerts. And I think if you're researching a topic specifically if you're doing it for some work-related research or if you're doing some academic research, what those alerts do is they watch the web and the news for you based on certain search phrases, and then they will periodically, and you get to decide how frequently, they will notify you when they find pertinent websites and or news articles.
And invaluable, because again, you know, you're going out, like for example, we're always researching topics that involve virtual teams, virtual offices. We also like to look for any mentions of our company in the press, so I have Google Alerts set up that look for Phil Montero, that look for youcanworkfromanywhere.com, I look for terms like virtual office, and those same rules apply when you're creating those, using the quotes, being very specific, so you only get back targeted news. But getting research delivered, hand-delivered to you, custom research, into your inbox without you having to go out and look for it is invaluable and a huge time saver for me. I mean, every, you know, I can choose, again, daily or weekly to get this email in there with all of these key things that I'm looking for.
And I think what you say there is an important point, and that's that, you know, I said at the top of the show that I think a lot of people are misguided about how much time they really do spend searching. And this is one of those things that by learning to do it well and by learning to do it effectively and by learning the tools at your disposal, you really can save yourself a considerable amount of time.
We talk about all the time about giving people their time back, and I would say this is probably learning how to search effectively is one of the top things for doing that. And we're going to be joined by Richard Robinson to talk more about search and research right after this break.
Would you, could you on a plane? Would you, could you on a train? In an airport? Hotel room? Would you, could you on the moon?
I could do it on a plane. I can do it on a train. Yes, in an airport or hotel room. I will do it on the moon. And you can too, so don't despair. You can work from anywhere.com.
Music by Kevin MacLeod.
Welcome back to the Anywhere Office. If you have a question or comment, email radioshow@theanywhereoffice.com. Now back to the show. Here are Phil and Jason.
Hey, welcome back to the Anywhere Office, our show about living a digital lifestyle and navigating the changing world of work. And we're talking about search and research today, how important it is, some different strategies and tips for doing this, which is something that so many information workers and so many people find themselves doing. So we are delighted to have as our special guest today, Richard Robinson, who is the president of Legacy Scribe, an award-winning family history writer, co-author of two books, and he's the information officer for the International Association of Professional Genealogists. This man knows how to research. Thanks for joining us today, Richard.
Yeah, hi guys. How you doing?
Good. Pretty good. Now, Richard, I'd like to know a little bit about, I know, you know, we've gotten to know you and a little bit about what you do, but I'd like you to share a little bit about that because I think you do some very interesting types of research through Legacy Scribe. You know, I think some history sections that people might not be aware of, that there are people that do that kind of history. Can you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, well, I help people, you know, connect their present with their past for the future. That's, if I ever meet anybody on an elevator, that's what I say. And they want to know, gee, what do you mean? Well, I do that through family history research and compiling their personal histories. So I research and write their family histories. Sometimes we turn them into a family history book. I interview them or anybody in their family or that they know to do their personal histories. A lot of those are turned into books. And I also help small businesses to achieve their dreams through our general writing and editing services. But most of our work is probably in the historical area.
And you also do histories of businesses and buildings and structures?
Oh, yes, we do actually house histories, any type of building histories, histories of businesses.
Now, when I first heard that you did house research, that wasn't something, I mean, that's an area of research that I wasn't even aware of that existed. And I know you had done a project in Delray Beach where you took a house that had some specific history and you created a book and thoroughly researched that to find out, you know, some of the myths and the history behind that.
Right. Now, just recently, the city of Delray Beach, Florida, published a book that I wrote that actually combined my historical research, my family history research, the personal history interviews that I did, and the history of this house. Actually, it was a hotel. And then I combined all those things with my 30 years of professional writing experiences and produced a book on this this old hotel in Delray Beach. That was actually a really fun project.
And that's not, I know you had mentioned, I think you were trying to find out if some jazz greats had played there, and I just got to wonder, is it different when you're researching people, like doing the genealogical research, than researching properties and businesses, or do you use a lot of the same resources and,
well,
I guess,
tools? It's not really
different tools?
Because we primarily look for people at first, and then when we find the people, we look to see what property they've owned and what their occupation was, you know, and when they were born and married and died and all those other good things. So it's actually, you know, it's almost the same thing.
It is. And what would you say, I guess, so what would be some fundamentals of if you're doing historical research? Now, I'm sure, you know, and one of the things I'd like you to talk about a little bit also is some of the specific search tools, and I'm sure some of them may be subscription-based, but let's say I'm going to go out and try to do some historical research of my own or look for some information. What would you say would be two or three fundamentals or tips that you would give people for doing that kind of research?
Well, I don't know. That's really a hard question because there are so many fundamentals. But just to break it down into a few, I would say, you know, perhaps, you know, one of the top fundamentals would be to do a reasonably exhaustive search for the information. That's very important, especially in family history, genealogy. where if you're researching someone, you have to research all the records that person created wherever he or she lived. Number two, you always have conflicts in history, problems, data that doesn't match up, so you have to resolve this conflicting evidence. And then you have to be, most important is be persistent, patient, systematic, and you always have to follow your leads through, because those records, you'll be able to find other records based on the various types of records that you study. And if I may add another one, and this one may sound a little unusual, but it's to trust no one. That's what you learn and from the genealogy greats, is that with, and especially now today, with the flood of information that we're getting on the Internet, especially, there's a lot more erroneous information that gets passed along more easily. So we have to, actually, we want to see these original records with our own eyes if we can. That's the ultimate goal.
Let me ask you about that while you're there, Richard. With the advent of this technology and the amazing amount of information available, has that made the type of research you do more challenging, or has it actually been a service to you, or how has it changed what you do?
Well, actually, it's good and it's bad. You know, with so much more information being available now, in the historic area, family history, all sorts of historical records, that a lot of people, there's so much out there now that they get confused. They don't know where to start. They don't know what to do with the information. A lot of people don't have time or the expertise to know how to compile their family history. So that's why they call on, you know, people like me.
Right.
A lot of my other colleagues that they ask for help.
And do you find yourself using those tools, though? Do you do more online research, or have you found tools on the Internet?
Oh, yeah. I mean, not only for the amateurs, but the pros use the Internet probably all day. I know I do. I use it most of the day. So it's a big help for me as well as it is for others.
Now you mentioned that there, I think, you know, when we were talking to you a little bit before we came on, that there are some specific tools that, as a professional, you know, we're here, obviously we're talking about a lot of generic search engines, things like Google and some of these other tools, but you must use some specific search tools, some of which may be even subscription-based, to do the type of research that you do. Can you talk a little bit about what specific resources that you use?
Sure. We use Google, too, but that's good for general searches. I mean, I could put in, if I was looking for Richard Robinson, I can put in Richard Robinson in Google, and I'm going to get thousands upon thousands of Richard Robinsons. So which one am I looking for? And when you do family history, or especially, you need to maybe go to some of the specific genealogy type of a website, and they have their own search engines. For example, Ancestry.com, which is a subscription-based site, they have their own search engines. You can just go on to Ancestry.com. Usually they ask for, you know, the first, middle, and last name of the person that you're searching for, and then you can fill in their birth year and what country and their death year and what country they died or what state they died in. And then they take that and pull up lots of different possibilities for you. So most of the genealogy sites you can't really get to by Googling. You have to go into
the specific databases. Let me ask you, do you have a favorite for looking for famous people and learning about their histories? Do you have a favorite biography site?
Well, actually, there is, and I think most public libraries, if you're a if you carry a card from the library, you can use their online services. A lot of those sites have a biography section where you can go in there, and they have several different databases of biographies. Or you can go to I would say that is the best way to go through your library site. Of course, there are many other sites that you can just get on the internet, but I usually go in through a public library where they have a whole, maybe several of them together. Hmm. And a lot of those you cannot get on the internet.
Richard, Phil here. One question Jason and I were talking about, which is, you know, I know there used to be a number of sites where if you were looking, occasionally I've looked for, and being that you do history searches, old friends and things that I've lost touch with. Is there a site or a service that you recommend for, you know, trying to reconnect with maybe family and friends that, I've noticed a lot of those are also paid too. Are there any good free ones out there to look up people?
Well, what we often happen is we have a client and they're looking for their ancestors and they don't know whether someone is alive or deceased. So that actually helps in the search because if they're deceased, then you know, you might know when they died, so you can look at for records earlier than that period. But an answer to this would be to look in the Social Security Death Index, which is on Ancestry.com. It's also on a free website called RootsWeb.com, and this database provides death information. It's mostly for people who have died since the 1960s. So that way we find out, and this is not... Not everyone who died is not listed in this index, but if you find them there, then you know probably where and when they died, and it helps you in your search.
All right. Well, I got to cut you off right there, Richard, while we go to a break. And when we come back, we're going to talk a little more about this search and research with Richard Robinson. Stick around.
Does your office sound like this? Or this. The choice is yours. You can work from anywhere.com.
Keeping you a step ahead of the changing world of business. This is Voice America Business.
Welcome back to the Anywhere Office. If you have a question or comment, email radioshow@theanywhereoffice.com. Now back to the show. Here are Phil and Jason.
Hey, welcome back up into the Anywhere Office, our show about living a digital lifestyle and navigating the changing world of work. Please feel free to come by the site, theanywhereoffice.com. Post your comments and feedback.
We're back with Richard Robinson, head of Legacy Scribe, and we were talking about search and research and most specifically about professional search and research that Richard does through his historical research with Legacy Scribe. And I wanted to ask you, coming back, we were talking about some tools for finding people, and Richard was talking about finding Social Security records and all. It was my understanding that the Mormon Church has a very large collection, maybe the largest collection of genealogical information, and I was wondering how much you utilize that, Richard, and if they have begun to digitize that so that you can access those databases online.
Well, I use that site all the time, which is familysearch.org. On the site, it's actually a free site. I use it a lot for the Family History Library catalog. Now, the Family History Library is the world's largest genealogical library, which is located in Salt Lake City. It is run by the Mormon Church, but they collect records from all around the world, all ethnic groups, all religions. They've been doing this for over a decade, I believe. So that, and they are a leader of in online information. In fact, they announced at the end of last year, actually last fall, that they were going to digitize and index all of their microfilm records, and they have more than 3 million rolls of microfilm.
Wow.
Stored there in actually a granite vault in a mountain near Salt Lake City. They apparently have started this project, and they're going to make these indexes and the actual text, the actual images of the microfilm available online. Now, at the outset, they said this would be a 10-year project. They probably will have the indexes online before that, but it's going in there and indexing 3 million rolls of microfilm. You can imagine how much manpower that will take.
Oh yeah,
sure.
That's no small job.
I was in Boston. They said the Big Dig would be a 10-year project, and I think they're on year 16. So
yeah, right.
What happens with that?
One
last question. I'd like to kind of ask you here, Richard. I mean, with all of that information coming available online, and with all of these resources being available, is that kind of genealogical information going to put professional genealogists like yourself, out of business? How does the need work there with all this information being available?
But no, it's not. It's probably even going to increase our business, because there's a lot of people, you just can't get everything on the Internet. You can't get all your family history, your genealogy on the Internet. It's just not there. Even when the Mormon Church puts all of the microfilm records that they have on the Internet, there will still be a lot of records that have not been microfilmed that you won't be able to find on the Internet even then. But with this flood of information that we're having now, and it's going to even get more information, because this is a very competitive business. This is actually, genealogy is big business, and there's a few leaders like Ancestry and the Mormon Church and others. They're actually, probably in a race to see who can get the most material on the Internet. But it's going to confuse. All this information is probably going to confuse a lot of people. They won't know where to start. They'll come into problems like how can they distinguish one person with the same name in the same place who was there at the same time. So actually, I'm finding I list my name on two or three professional websites, and that's where I get a lot of my business, because people even now are saying, well, hey, I don't have the time to do this, or hey, I need some help, or I run into a brick wall. So they call, or not call, they actually go online, they look up an organization like the Association of Professional Genealogists at apgen.org, which is an association of 1,600 members around the world, or they go to another website, the Board for Certification of Genealogists. This is the organization that I received my certification from as a certified genealogist at bcgcertification.org. Or if you want to have your pass on your legacy to your family or your grandchildren, you might go to a website like the Association of Personal Historians. That's personalhistorians.org. And these three sites have directories of members, and they tell you, what to expect. If you want to hire someone who is a member of the organization, when you hire them to do some research or work, what you can expect.
And how can people contact you, Richard, if they wanted to maybe have their history done? Is it legacyscribe.com?
Yes, that's my website. They can go there, and then they can just, link and send me an email. I suggest that's a good place to go, because you'll see what services I offer. and then just you know, send Dick Robinson, LegacyScribe.com, an email, and I'll you know, talk to you about your what you'd like to have done.
Great. Well, thanks so much for joining us today, Richard, and sharing your wisdom of search and research with us. Thanks a lot.
Great, guys. Take
care. Appreciate
it.
Bye-bye. We'll talk to you soon. All right, that's going to wrap it for another day here on the Anywhere Office. We'd like to thank Ryan, our engineer. He's been driving. We're just riding.
Next week, we're kicking off something I'm really excited about, too. We're going to do a three-part small business series here on the Anywhere Office, all about how to use some of these strategies and the technology and some of the things we've talked about here, and how to leverage the Internet to grow your small business. And next week, we're going to talk about creating a unified company image and the power of branding. And we're going to be joined by Bob Baker. I'm excited to talk with Bob. He is the author of Branding Yourself Online, a great book, and it really helps a lot in the independent music world, but knows a lot about branding, so we'll be kicking it off with that.
Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next time around.
Montero Consulting would like to thank you for listening to the Anywhere Office. To contact Phil or Jason, visit theanywhereoffice.com. Tune in next Wednesday for another entertaining and informative hour of the Anywhere Office with Phil and Jason Montero.